It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard. Rob Ferret is out today. You are with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, 2015 was a big year for science news. We'll talk to an editor at Discover Magazine about the top stories in neuroscience, math, and physics. First, a shooting at the mall in Madison caused panic this weekend, and schools in several states have shut down because of threats in the past week. While the events themselves are different, they both involve responding to stressful and possibly dangerous situations quickly. Back in October, we had UW-Madison's chief of police on the show to talk about how people can stay safe during mass shootings. And we wanted to have her on again to talk about these events more recently and how police and bystanders should respond. Joining us now is Susan Reisling, chief of police at the UW-Madison Police Department. Chief Reisling, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, when your department gets a call for an incident that might be similar to the shooting at Easttown Mall in Madison this past weekend, how do you respond?
Quickly. The key really is speed, getting there, getting as much information as you can possibly gather from the callers that are calling. And of course, when you have a situation like a mall shooting, you're going to get multiple callers. And depending on what they saw, you're going to get multiple incidents, given to you, even though maybe it's one incident, people just see it 10 different ways. So those are always challenging, but you have to get there. You have to get there quick, and then you've got to sort out exactly what's going on and what people saw versus what actually happened.
And then you've got, in this case, a mall during the holidays filled with people, teeming with people, children, families,
yes,
older people. So how does that factor into how police respond?
Well, the thing about the mall shooting that we have to keep in mind, because I know a lot of people have said, it's a gun-free zone and that's why it happened there. And, that's just not the truth. What happened was it's a long-standing feud between people and they decided to work it out there. So what happens in those situations is obviously if you hear gunfire anywhere, whether you're in a mall, a theater, wherever you are these days, church, you need to try as fast as you can to get away from it and to try to get out. And if you can not get out, then you've got to try to hide and as quickly as possible get to 911 and tell the police what it is that you know and what it is that you actually saw so that they can begin to put together a coordinated response.
Well, what you described, getting away from it, getting safe as quickly as possible, in a way that did seem to happen at this Easttown Mall incident. On the other hand, there was panic. Panic is a word, a reasonable response, of course, to what happened. But there were children separated from their families. There were people, by some accounts, sort of stampeding. Was that what you would expect to happen as people try to get safe, or could people have done anything differently?
Oh, I think that is one of the things that you can expect to have happen. It's unfortunate. You wish everybody could just, remain calm. But the fact of the matter is that it's human nature to fight or flight. And in this situation, during flight, people do get separated from their loved ones and their kids and all of those things. And today, we've got the ability to get back in touch with each other relatively quickly through text messaging and so forth in ways that we didn't, in the past. But yeah, I think any time you bring a gun into a crowded place, you can expect panic if one is used.
We're speaking right now with UW-Madison's Chief of Police, Susan Reisling, talking about how the public and police respond to shooting incidents and threats of violence. There was a shooting over the weekend at Easttown Mall in Madison, also looking at a couple of closed schools across the country because of threats of violence. And Chief Reisling, I want to pick up on something you said, that some people had been saying that the reason that the shooting happened at the mall was because this was a gun-free zone. And this morning we had news that State Representative Bob Gannon released a statement saying that it's time to end gun-free zones like the one at Easttown. What do you think of his statement and the fact he's obviously asserting here that if people had guns, civilians might have been armed, maybe this wouldn't have happened?
Oh, yeah, we can only imagine. Let's just think about that. Okay, so two people have a dispute in the mall. 15 people start to argue and fight, and they're fighting. And in the middle of the argument between all of these people that was going on at Easttown Mall, somebody pulls out a gun and shoots the gun off. Now you got a crowded mall with all these shoppers, and now you instead have two dozen people with guns all of a sudden, all carrying concealed. They're all the good guy with a gun. They're going to stop the bad guy with a gun. I just can't even fathom how bad that could have gotten, how quickly. Because people who don't know who shot the first shot see somebody else with a gun, and they don't know what's going on. And it's just more chaos on top of more chaos. And I really think that the representative doesn't understand the nature of the crime at Easttown, which was two people who knew one each other who had a dispute, and all of the concealed carry in the world is not going to stop that kind of situation from playing out. That shooting at Easttown could have just as easily happened in the neighborhood where the two people are from, or it could have just happened randomly on the street corner. That's not something that concealed carry is going to stop in any way. And a matter of fact, I just think it's going to make things far worse if we don't do something to get background checks completely covered, and also make sure that only responsible law-abiding citizens are the ones with the weapons. We need to stop the illegal gun flow, and we need to do a number of things, but giving more people weapons at Easttown Mall is definitely not the answer.
We're going to switch gears now and look at schools in California and New Hampshire that had closed down recently because of threats of violence. Is this a new frontiers for schools, or are most schools ready to go in what's been a post-Columbine world for a long time now?
No, I think it's a new frontier. I think we as a country have some really tough decisions to make. Here's the dilemma I think school administrators face. First, the threat comes in, and whether it is credible or not is not always easy to ascertain. But even if you ascertain that the threat is not particularly credible, it's a lot of weight to put on a school administrator's shoulders to decide to keep the classrooms open and functioning on the very off chance, the very unlikely chance, that the threat is actually a credible threat and is actually going to be put into motion. And so, out of an abundance of caution, many school administrators will close their elementary school, middle school, high school, etc. And that's a real problem, because the more that we close because someone makes a threat, the more power we're shifting into people's hands who don't want to take exams, who don't like what's going on in the school for whatever reason, or as we saw recently with the University of Chicago, people who have nothing to do with the University of Chicago, get wrapped up in this dilemma. They actually were able to arrest the individual in the Chicago situation, but in the Los Angeles or the New Hampshire situation, those threats came actually from overseas. And, you know, it's just very, very difficult. I think there's a certain element in our society that somehow thinks this is funny to be able to have that kind of power to close down a school system. And so those folks in school systems have to be really careful to balance and weigh whether the threat is credible or not. The public will be completely unforgiving if a threat is called in, a school district doesn't close, and the threat is acted upon. Yet at the same time, we all know that we're going to get threat fatigue. And the more and more we shut down these places, and the more and more we try to sort out what's going on, the more the paradigm shifts over to those that want to just wreak havoc and cause chaos and really do affect major institutions.
And given all that, what do you want school administrators to know about the world that we live in and how they need to start framing these events as they go forward and this may become more common?
Well, I think that really we need a very strong working relationship between law enforcement and the school districts to really credibly go through the threat. We also need the help, quite frankly, because a lot of this covers, you know, state lines or country to country. We need the federal government to step up here and be a part of this and to really be able to assess these threats as credible or not. And then to be able to share with people the fact that a threat has been made, but that it is deemed not credible. And then parents need to make a decision about whether they want to send their child to school that day. But to close the whole institution is really shifting the power differential from our institutions to lone wolves who are really just out to cause chaos and havoc.
How much have things changed when we talk about the possibility of threats against public institutions or mass shootings? How much has this changed during your tenure in law enforcement?
Oh, it's changed tremendously, but it's ebbed and flowed. In the Vietnam era, which was before my time in the profession, we did have bombings right here at the University of Wisconsin in Sterling Hall and the Red Gym. We did have those things happen, and so that's a part of American history. Then we saw it wane through the 80s and 90s and picked up again in the 90s with the World Trade Center and also, obviously, Oklahoma City, and it shifted into a different psychology. In the late 90s is when we began to see the Lone Wolf Act, the Columbines, and then in the 2000s, obviously, Virginia Tech, NIU, and so on. And we all know the long, long litany between Newtown and Aurora, Colorado, and all of the different mass casualty shootings. We have reached a tipping point where disgruntled people think it is within the playbook to take a gun and to just take out whatever their grievance is on people who have little or nothing to do with what the situation is that came upon the grievance in the first place. And we as a country are going to have to figure out a way to deal with this, because the proliferation of weapons and the proliferation of people who believe that this is an okay thing to do has really spiraled.
Chief Reisling, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and I only wish we had a happier topic before the holidays. Happy holidays to everyone.
And the same to you. That was UW-Madison's Chief of Police, Susan Reisling, talking about how the public should respond to shooting incidents and threats of violence and what the new climate is like going forward.